POV brand that spotlights the positive side of the wrestling community. I'm your host, Jackie Rodriguez, joined as always by my co-host, my right-hand man, and my favorite Canadian, the producer who, Mr. Kyle Masters. Kyle, how you doing tonight?
God, your favorite Canadian.
No pressure.
No pressure to all the other Canadians that listen to the show. Sorry. Look at that spot. But hi, Jackie. Hello. How are you today?
Hi. I'm good. I feel like I'm doing a little bit better than you tonight.
Yeah. I'm one step away from being completely crippled, but that's all right. I'm good, though. I'm Gucci, right? As you're saying before the show, I'm good. I'll just, you know, if I fall down, I'm going to have to hit my life alert button because I won't be able to get up.
We're at that stage. Here I am saying we're highlighting the positive side of the wrestling community, and Kyle's talking about how he's one inch away from going to the hospital. But
yeah, I'll be fine.
But that's life. But on a more positive note, we have the distinct privilege of having with us on the show the co-host of Tag Talk on Fightful Overbooked and a very dear friend of ours. I'm super excited to have her with us tonight. Kylie Fuller, how are you today?
Woo!
I'm good. It's been a long day, but this is a good way to wrap up my day, so I'm super excited to be here.
I'm like, it's a Monday. We always pick our Mondays to record, so it's like we're going to get people on the worst day of the week, I feel like. But you know what? We're going to keep it up. We're going to keep it, like, you know, nice and uplifted and upbeat and
yeah.
and keep it hyped. We're going to keep the mood good. But yeah, so again, when we were sitting and thinking of all our guests that we wanted to have on the show, we had some people very high on the priority list, and you were up there up near the top. So I'm really glad scheduling worked out the way that it did, and we're able to have you as our second guest now on the show.
That's such a big honor. I'm getting emotional now. No, you guys are the best. I love you guys, but you know that.
No, huge fan of what you and Haley do over at Tag Talk and Fightful Overbooked. I try to tune in. I hope none of my employers are listening to this, because your show does come on while I am still at work and still at the office. So I'm snitching on myself.
Well, it's over. They know now.
But I'll have it on like a low volume, and I'm just like, no, it's Monday. It's 3 o'clock, and I got to watch the show. So I make sure it's weekly.
It's fantastic, weekly guys. If you haven't watched it yet, literally watch it. It's one of my favorite shows ongoing right now. I have like a list of podcasts that I cycle through on a weekly basis, and theirs are always in there. And I don't listen to a lot of podcasts. So like, for you to make the list, it's a good list. It's like my list of Jericho. Like, it's a great list to be part of. So I'm at list of podcasts. You're in there. And honestly, guys, check it out. It's on Fightful Overbook, Tag Talk with her and Haley, and we're going to get Haley on the show as well too. But my God, you guys do such a good job of that show. I'm very impressed.
Thank you so much. That means so much to me, because Tag Talk is my baby. that's my child. So that means so much to me.
Yeah. It's like, anytime that you have your creation, you put it out into the world, you're just like, I don't know how this is going to be received. But when it's well received and highly praised, it's just like, oh, sigh of relief. now it really is. So to start off, this is kind of like how I like to lead into everything, but I want to know, this is a wrestling based podcast. What are your earliest memories of being a wrestling fan? And this kind of ties into a question that we actually got from one of our Twitter followers, Ascended, where he asked, who in particular got you into wrestling, if there was a specific person?
So I was actually really lucky. I grew up with wrestling because my dad is an old school wrestling fan. He's been a fan of wrestling since he was little.
Oh.
So he kind of got us into it. He would just put it on TV. It would just be on whatever. But I was also weird, because I feel like a lot of kids grow up with WWE, and I did. But I also grew up with what was TNA, and Ring of Honor. So I kind of had like this diverse experience with wrestling. So a lot of my earliest memories of wrestling are, you know, unfortunately, maybe fortunately, of Jeff Jarrett and Kurt Angle and CM Punk and Bryan Danielson and all that kind of stuff. And maybe not so much John Cena and Randy Orton and those kind of guys.
It's cool, though, because it's like, you're right. A lot of people that we talk to, especially like in, you know, my age group in particular, you always are going to hear a lot of the same kind of narratives where it's like people got in around the same time and they grew up idolizing or like, you know, being fans of the same types of people. But you never think that people who kind of come into it later on are going to be exposed to very different types of wrestling. And it definitely shapes the way that you view and the types of things that you're into later on.
Yeah, I didn't have like a parent that like both my parents knew of pro wrestling, but they never were like, oh, you gotta watch this. Like they never sat me down in front of a TV. And like I discovered it on my own. Like I said on our last episode, like I stumbled upon Kane and Undertaker in an Inferno match from 99 or 98 was, and I'm like, oh my god, like what the hell is this? And it got me hooked. And then it was actually funny, in the early 2000s, I went to, I guess it was like, it's like an HMB, I don't know, it was like a video store, and they had these DVDs of like early 2000s TNA pay-per-views, and I bought some of them, and I'm like, oh my god, what the hell is this? They have an eight-sided, like, what is this? Like, I started, and then I saw Jeff Hardy on it, like, Jeff Hardy was on one of them, I'm like, what the hell? Like, and back then, I didn't know about different companies and different brands. You're just like WWE, and that was it. So when I stumbled across these, and that's what I introduced to AJ Styles, Samoa Joe, lots of people from the Christopher Daniels, lots of names. I was a big Petey Williams fan because doing the Destroyer back then was a bigger deal than it is today.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was. It really was.
Yeah, when you saw the story back then, it was like seeing Haley's comments, like, holy shit, what the hell was that? Yeah, it's, I never really had I hear it a lot. Like, it's always like, oh, my parents or my so-and-so family member got me into wrestling. I just stumbled across it one day. It was out of the blue. And I'm actually glad I did.
Yeah,
you
did too.
Yeah, right? Not just watching hockey all the time.
It's really weird, though, because it's like my mom was a big fan. And oddly enough, she told us years later, because she didn't put us on to wrestling. We kind of like discovered it on our own. And then it was just kind of like after the fact, she's like, oh yeah, you know, I used to watch this as a kid and stuff. And her and my dad had tickets to the first WrestleMania.
Oh, no way.
And yes, they did. And they were all set to go. It was kind of like a date night thing they were doing together. And I think they actually made it to Madison Square Garden, and then somebody asked to buy their tickets and decided to pay them a ton more money than what they had paid for the tickets at the time. So they sold them. And I remember my brother and I looking at her like, you idiot. Like, how could you do that? You could have been part of history.
But I mean, back then it's like, people are like, what the hell is WrestleMania? That sounds fake.
She was like, you know, it was a cool thing. She's like, but it had no historic implications at the time. So who the hell cared? We just wanted the money.
Yeah, I think like Mr. T was in like the main event. So like maybe, I think probably the majority of people were paying for, you know, Hogan and, you know, the Mr. T showing up. So like, but not having a historical significance, I would have done the same thing your parents did. Like, twice the value. Here you go. Thank you.
So you and Haley host Tag Talk over on Fightful Overbook, like we mentioned. So what is it about tag team wrestling in particular that's so appealing to you versus other styles?
So for me, tag team wrestling, just the friendship and that bond between tag team partners, I really, really enjoy that. I think you compare tag team wrestling to singles or, you know, to even trios, I would say. There's something so much more intimate about the stories you can tell in a tag team, especially tag teams that are as close as, you know, the legendary tag teams, like the Young Bucks, the FTRs, the Rock and Rolls of the world. That bond that you share as tag team partners, it just appeals to me as a fan of entertainment. And I also really find it like a lot more, this is probably going to upset someone in the world, but I think there's a lot more opportunity for creativity with physical things too. Like, putting together tag team offense, putting together spots, all that sort of stuff, because you have more people, I feel like you can be a little bit more creative and mm-hmm. you can rely on, like, you know, if you're a wrestler and you know your weakness is this thing, your tag team partner's weaknesses are this thing, you can work around that and still create really, really fun matches. Not that you can't do that as a singles wrestler. I feel like with tag team wrestling, there's so much more that you can do with it. And it's just a lot of fun to see the great tag teams of the world. Because there's a lot of bad tag team wrestling. I should say that. There's a lot of bad tag team wrestling. But when it's tag team wrestling is done right, and there's attention paid into it, especially by teams who are really, really dedicated to being a tag team, it's really special. I don't think there's anything else like it.
No, completely agreed. And then it's, you know, when you see the nature of, like, a solid established tag team versus the, you know, when you have the two singles people that they just throw into a tag team, and you can definitely pick up the differences and the nuances. And then of course you get the tag teams that are the brothers, you know, tag teams, or the siblings just in general. Now, like you have like the Renegade Twins or something like that, that are now tag teaming. And the synergy that comes with it, it's such an incredible thing to witness. Just the athleticism that's involved with it, the amount of trust that you have in your partners to be available for you when they need to be available for you. And like you said, the storytelling aspect of it, because it's not just you. There's a whole other person that you have to account for and not steal their spotlight while you're trying to kind of, you know, put yourself out there and get yourself over, as the saying goes.
Yeah, if there's anyone that
say
But yeah, Jackie, if anyone that appreciates tag team wrestling, I think out of us two is definitely you, because clearly behind you is, well, I guess one of them. Can't see him because the camera's cut off.
You can only see Dax at the
Jackie,
time.
Who is,
I promise you, Cash is there too.
AKA FTR girl 5462922 here in living color. She appreciates tag team wrestling, I believe, like the same way that you just described. And it's true. Everything you said was spot on. It's a different appreciation when you're watching a tag team match and a team that's, like you said, a good tag team that can create moves and can create creative spots that you won't necessarily ever get in a singles match. So it's definitely a different ball game with tag team wrestling, and the appreciation for it should always be the same, especially like exactly what's coming from you there. It's truly special.
I definitely agree. And a lot, like, looking back as an adult now, a lot of the wrestling I really liked when I was younger, and you know, the magic of wrestling is so big when you're a kid. It was, a lot of it was tag team wrestling. I was a big Edge and Christian fan, more Christian than Edge, but I really loved them. The Dudleys, the Hardys, all these teams, to a lesser extent, like DX and the NWO and stuff. but I don't know. I've just always been super into it. And like, looking up here on my desk, I have tag team stuff. I have Young Bucks, FTR. It's just different than singles wrestling. Not that I don't like singles wrestling. I love a good singles match, but something special.
Yeah, and I thought that I was like I think even in my Twitter bio I have something like tag team wrestling enthusiasts, and I thought that I was up there.
Oh no.
And then when I break, you know, like the psychology down, I'm just like, did I even watch the match? Do I even know shit about anything? Because it's just, you two really do like break it down like on a molecular level. But in a way that is very exciting, because there is a whole storytelling aspect of it that I think sometimes gets lost on people. So hearing other people that have that level of appreciation for it, it's just like, oh, this is so refreshing.
It really does feel like we're in a tag team renaissance of sorts. You know, the Young Bucks have been around for 10 years doing it, but it feels like they inspired a generation of people, of wrestlers, who just really want to be tag teams. They have like very few singles ambitions and they just want to be tag teams. And that's really cool to see, because I feel like in North America, especially the United States, it's tag team wrestling is kind of, it faded out, it's coming back in, but it's really cool to see tag teams who do put, you know, attention to the details in a match so that people like me and you can pay attention to the stories and the psychology of it, and we're rewarded for that, for being tag team wrestling fans. Mm-hmm. And we're not seeing just a match with four singles guys who are all feuding and they're just in a tag team match for the, you know, for the heck of it. So
can they really coexist?
No, the answer is always no.
But speaking of storylines and storytelling, because I know that you're very big on that also, as someone who has to analyze Wrestling Weekly, sometimes we kind of get lost in the formulaic and predictable nature of things. So what is the last storyline that you would say surprised you in a very positive way?
So one that really, I guess you could say this surprised me in a positive way. I'm really intrigued by Hangman Page right now. I feel like he's, his entire story, it's like after he won the championship, of course, I always thought that he would be champion for like ages and ages and ages. And I'm really surprised by this edge to his character and this feud with Jon Moxley. And I'm really surprised that he's losing. And that he's sort of not the world champion, biggest star of the world in that feud. That was really surprising. But I guess something that surprised me even more than that was the Acclaimed and the fact that I like them. when I don't remember when all the pandemic era wrestling blends together for me. It's just that's a year, but it's 2 years, but it is. So the Acclaimed being with Billy Gunn and me loving it and actively rooting for the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn to beat everyone. I don't care who you put up against them. I'm rooting for the Acclaimed. That story, especially Billy Gunn just ditching his sons. It's something so silly in wrestling that it would never happen in real life. It's so silly. I mean, I guess it could.
Billy, I was saying, it might. I don't,
it might. It'd be that family if it was ever one family. I'm pretty sure it would be that family.
I mean, I don't know Billy Gunn. I don't know his kids. His kids were, I met them a few times. They're very nice boys. But that, it really surprised me that Billy Gunn did that. And also that it was good and that the Acclaimed accepted him and were like, this is our dad now. That was really, I just love it.
I mean, we got to be part of, I mean, we all three were there, be part of that special moment where, you know, the quote unquote should have been an audible situation in All Out in Chicago.
Ooh, when
that's kind of like what's, I mean, the Acclaimed were over, but that kind of sparked the crowd reaction, how over they are now, was that night. And then from there on, it's just been a crazy ride of popularity with these guys. And I'm glad that they actually took the time to make them tag team champions. I was afraid that they weren't ever going to get them. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you mentioning also the Hangman thing. I always wonder, like, if, I always thought that too, kind of had that small thought in the back of my head that if he becomes champion, it's going to be for a while and they might do something like with him and someone down the line. But I wonder if Punk was never in this company, if he truly would have held on to that title longer.
Probably. I think so. It's just when you have CM Punk in your company, you almost have to make him champ. It's just people want him to be champ. You can't say no to that. Yeah. I mean, you could, but it probably wouldn't be smart to not do that. But the Hangman story is really interesting to me because the breakup with the Elite, that story, I think, is one of the best stories in wrestling. And we went away from it. We're coming back to it. But when Hangman wrestled with the Dark Order against the Elite. That was super interesting to me. And now, I don't know how many people are Being the Elite fans. I watch every episode of Being the Elite. Now he's like angry and he's mad and he's violent. And that's almost the champion that he should have been. Like he won the world title. He's the guy. But even when he was world champion, he was still anxious and he was still depressed and he was still unsure of himself. So I think there's a deeper story there. And the CM Punk wrinkle to it all. That's like the looming cloud in AEW. CM Punk.
But the will he, won't he situation. Will he, won't he?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not CM Punk. But I was happy that CM Punk won the title. But the Hangman thing is interesting.
It's such a cool story. It's honestly so cool. And to see it almost kind of continue now, like there's still references from when they first started this whole thing. Now it's crazy how long. That's why I love about one thing I love about AEW is when they do a story like that, there's so much long-term storytelling, which is so cool. And it's made for us wrestling nerds. That's what AEW is for. It's literally for like the deep wrestling nerd that goes nuts for this stuff, and we get it on weekly TV and yearly with this company. It's so cool, and I'm so fascinated by where it goes from here too, especially now that he's turning a little bit of the anger dial up. So we'll see where that goes.
Yeah, I love Hangman with a chip on his shoulder. That's like the best Hangman. It's definitely, I think by far, at least for me, the most relatable character that AEW has. Like, who can't relate to being anxious and depressed and angry and like all these emotions and feeling like you're not really finding your footing amongst your really talented friends and stuff like that? I mean, just everything about Hangman is freaking great. I can't wait to see where they go with
that promo next. In Toronto still hits deep. Like against Moxley, I couldn't, when I was there live, I was like, oof. I felt that up in the box I was in. I was like, damn.
Yeah, and like, that's something you said AEW, but I guess maybe this generation of wrestlers does really well. I think when people think of pro wrestling, they think of, you know, the superhero characters, the Hulk Hogan's, the Ultimate Warriors, the John Cena's. Yeah, they think of these sort of unstoppable superhuman athletes. But the wrestling I like the most is, you know, is the Hangman's, is the John Moxley's, these relatable characters where, okay, I believe actually that they're talented athletes, but also that they're humans too. So it makes the entire wrestling experience so much more, you know, people always say suspend your disbelief, but it's wrestling in 2023. Oh my goodness. I don't know. It's just better to me when I believe that this is a human being who is actually feeling these things and experiencing these things with his friends and all this. Maybe that's why I like tag team wrestling so much.
There you
when
go.
When you can see something of yourself in any character, whether it be movies, TV, in pro wrestling, you know, like when you can see yourself in that character, it makes you want to get behind them. It makes you want to support them. So absolutely, the relatable characters are the best. But pivoting a little bit here, because this is something that really fascinates me. You're a tattoo girl. And I commend you, because every time I see you pop up with a new tattoo, I'm like, I only have two. And those things freaking hurt. All right. And I know, like, I suffered through the two that I have. So I'm like, the fact that you have as many as you do, you're tough, because I could never. As much as I would want to, I don't know that I can. So the question is, how many wrestling tattoos or wrestling related tattoos do you have currently? And do you have any working ideas for future tattoos in that theme?
I have a lot of wrestling tattoos because I hate to be like that person, but I get tattoos of things that I like. I just don't get random tattoos. I have, it's going to be hard to see. I have Fight Forever.
Nice.
I have Omega, Kenny Omega. Yeah. This one, Jeff Hardy drew this one on my arm.
I remember that. I remember you posting about that. Yeah.
Butterfly for Hangman. Oh, how could I forget? And then I have 7-star FTR.
Hey.
Yes. Yeah.
So, and I do have plans for more. I just...
So the Cody neck tattoo is coming soon. I gotcha. All
right. Coming soon. Yeah, okay. I'm gonna get it in the same place too.
Gotcha. Just all right.
So everyone knows. Yeah.
Sounds good.
It's hard planning tattoos because you want to get something unique that no one else has, but you also just don't want to rip a wrestler's like art or their like logo or their brand. You know, you want it to be like unique and personal. That's what I try to do. Like, I got a butterfly for Hangman Page because his butterfly jeans were a big thing at the time, and it was spur of the moment. There was an opportunity to get it. 7 stars for FTR. Like, someone who sees the stars, they're not going to know it's about FTR, but like, we know it's about FTR.
Yeah.
So I try to be like creative in that way. Not that there's anything wrong with getting logos tattooed on you.
I was going to say, guess what I have on my shoulder?
I think it's really cool. It's like, not to name drop it, but I have a friend, Mike. He has a CM Punk tattoo that is one of the coolest tattoos in the world, but it is CM Punk, obviously, clearly CM Punk. So I have a tattoo for Hangman. I have one for Kenny. I don't have one for the Young Bucks. Mm. I'd like to get something for the Young Bucks that isn't a deer. I don't want a deer tattooed on me.
No.
But I don't know. I don't know what else I would get. I my brain is just, there's nothing.
That's really interesting because you're right. You do tend to go with more like abstract themes, which is really cool because, like you said, you're not going to run into people who have the tattoos that you have for that purpose. But that's gonna be an interesting one to try to come up with because you don't want anybody to look at you like a deer. Are you a hunter? Are you?
I live in the South, so it would be believable.
I mean, there's also like their lightning bolt. I know it's a logo, I guess, or like the word carry on.
Ooh, carry on. I am a Supernatural fan too. Yeah. So it's like two birds, one stone.
Look at that great show, by the way, too.
So good.
Yeah, I'm like, and they have like such great like gear, like the colors and the prints and things like that that can be worked. I don't know. Do you have like a lot of color in your tattoos, or is it a lot? It's a lot of line work, I think, right?
Yeah, I have to. Okay, this is like maybe oversharing, but I have to be like kind of careful when it comes to color ink and tattoos because I'm allergic to red ink.
Oh,
so okay. A lot of the colors have a. Like, I have to be careful with it. So I've kind of steered away. A lot of my stuff is just black work. But I'm not opposed to color. And I have thought if I ever did get a color tattoo, it would be for the Young Bucks. Because you can't not get a Young Bucks tattoo and have it not be color. So maybe I'll just go with the deer head. And I'll just make it so colorful and, you know, poetic that no one would mistake it for a hunter tattoo. I don't know.
It's like, I like to hunt and I like to party.
That's
and
what it's that
like,
means.
And I like to rave. I like to rave when I hunt.
I go hunting in the day and then I go to the raves
big
at
deer
night,
girl.
That's my life. Yeah. Like a horse girl, but I'm deer girl.
Yeah, but that is so that's actually really surprising to me because I would think that like of all the wrestling related tattoos that you would have that that you would have all three members of the Elite like represented in some way, shape or form.
Oh, but, she just saw on Twitter, was it today or yesterday? Someone got like the silhouette of their entrance done on their arm.
I love that. It just came up on my For You tab. I hate that thing. And I was like, that is so cool. Which is funny because it's not a wrestling tattoo, but I had just gotten this little acorn tattoo.
Oh.
And I saw that. And I was like, that is so creative to get that silhouette. It was nicely done. It was really cute. But now I can't go get a silhouette of the Young Bucks because now everyone's going to know that I saw it on this other.
They're going to be like, you ripped off their idea.
Just wait a year and everyone will forget.
Just wait a year. No one will ever see. Yeah. They won't look at this and be like, wait a minute. I know for a fact that you said.
Oh, someone on Twitter will. It's always got to be someone on Twitter who's just ready to ruin your day.
Yeah, seriously. To rain on the parade. But at the same time, I'm like, hey, if you watch this podcast and you got that information from there, thanks for watching. We appreciate you. Yeah,
thanks for supporting me.
Kyle, you have some questions, so I kind of want to like pitch it off to you.
Ooh. And I like this. So they're Jackie always has or does a good job with writing questions. I suck, so mine are really, really simple. Two wrestling related ones and two non-wrestling related ones. We'll start with the wrestling one since we're on the topic of wrestling. So I want to know your thoughts, because it always gets brought up in the wrestling community and there's always a debate if they would do one, and Tony Khan recently got asked about it too. Your thoughts on if a WWE and AEW collab event, whether it be pay-per-view or one-time show, would be ever possible, and if it does happen, what would be your dream match? Mine would be Roman and Moxley, so something like that.
I do think it's possible, and I think a little bit of is me being like a dreamer and just saying, yeah, of course. but it does feel more possible than ever, especially if WWE sells to the right person. I think it'll be a lot more possible, because I think it's something that Triple H would be open to, because I think back to the Elite versus the New Day thing and how hard they worked to make it happen. The match never happened, but I think Triple H would be open to it. So I do think it's more possible than ever. And it does feel like wrestling is trending that way, with everybody but WWE is working with each other pretty much. Mm-hmm. But my dream match, it would probably... Oh, okay. So I have two. But you're just going to have to accept that I have two.
That's fine. That's fine.
Bring it on.
So I would absolutely love to see Kenny Omega versus AJ Styles on a big like stage. You know, they're getting older. Excited. So, but I definitely think there's so much history there. Even after AJ went to WWE, I feel like the Bullet Club has always been a part of AJ's WWE story. So I think that would be really, really interesting. And my other one is, maybe it's just like a little bit of, you know, a little bit of a selfish thing, but I would absolutely love 100,000% to see Dakota Kai versus Jade Cargill.
Ooh.
I think it'd be a really great match. And I would love to see, Jade has had a lot of great matches. I should say she's had 50 great matches, but I would love to see her wrestle someone like Dakota or even someone like Candice LeRae, who is so skilled in ways that Jade maybe is not. And that, you know, contrast of styles and wrestling and contrast of size and build and all this, that stuff. I think that's something WWE does really, really well that I would like to see AEW do better in the women's division. So if that show 100%. Ever happened, I think that'd be a good test.
Yeah, like I picked Roman and Mox. I think my woman's one would probably be, I think a while ago, I kind of picture like a Britt and Becky like build up would be really great. Like their promos against each other would be knocked out of the park promos, I think. In-ring would probably be really good too. I probably would have said Mercedes and Jade if Mercedes was still part of WWE. Which, again, we don't know what's going on.
Yeah, that was one. From now. Oh, that was one that I really wanted to see. And if she has the potential to jump over to AEW, even if it's just for a short little stint, that is a match I definitely want to see.
But the Roman and Mox thing just would be so cool to me, because, like, it's when Mox was there, he was never, like, Roman was always being built as the big, like, the top guy. Mm-hmm. And that was even after the Shield. And kind of like Mox was always in the shadows. Now that he left, he went to another company and became the top guy, the same way that Roman's the top guy in that company. So like that story alone would make for an epic main event. I think the biggest thing with this whole idea of these two companies coming together for a collab event would be behind the scenes and them in a boardroom deciding, okay, who's going over and who's not going over in matches.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, everyone would have to make concessions. Like, okay, Roman can go over if Jade goes over, something like that.
It would have to match up. Like, the one company can't leave the event up on top of the other.
It's tied at the end. We keep score like Survivor Series.
Yeah.
And Yeah, it'll be fine. It'll
do
it'll
the do fine. The even split. You gotta like assign a point system or something like that per wrestler and just do it that way, because that's where it always falls apart, is when the egos come into play and it's like nobody wants to come out on the losing end. But it's theoretically speaking, who stands to win the most is the fans. And to think about all the possibilities of the dream matches, especially like I think in the women's division too, because I feel like AEW is just starting to kind of like find its footing, but WWE has some phenomenal women's talent, and I think the matches that you could see there would be off the charts.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people who wrestle in AEW either have history in WWE or they have history with people who are now in WWE. So if WWE would allow stories that bring that in, sort of stuff from the outside, it'd be really interesting. And I do think if it happened, AEW would probably have to make more concessions than WWE, just because WWE is the giant and this is a bigger opportunity for AEW than WWE. But the Mox one is also really interesting because when the I remember when the Shield was really like at its peak before before the Seth Rollins turn and after, fans really wanted Dean Ambrose to be the guy. They didn't want Roman. They really wanted Dean Ambrose. So that's like a nice little wrinkle in the story. Seth Rollins, though, he's just he's just there. Seth is just special guest referee.
I think it would be Seth and probably Kenny. I think would love to see.
He's so good.
Yeah. Or if I know Kimmy would hate this, but if Ospreay ever joined AEW, it would be hilarious to have him go up against Seth Rollins. But this next question kind of ties into like what you just mentioned, like WWE being the big conglomerate, the big company that they are. If you had to pick between, I posted this question on our Elite POV a while ago. If you had to pick between the four AEW pay-per-views or create your own event, which one would you pick to be its WrestleMania, to do a stadium show, like turn it into a stadium show once a year and label that as like AEW's version of WrestleMania?
To me, and I've been to a lot of AEW pay-per-views, so I'm pretty confident in this. The shows that have always felt the biggest are Double or Nothing. I think, I don't know what it, maybe it's just because it's Vegas and Vegas just feels major. I don't know. But it just always feels like that is when a lot of AEW stories, their long-term stories, their multi-pay-per-view stories come to a head. Mm-hmm. And it's also a creative refresh for them. So probably Double or Nothing. If All Out is cursed, so
All Out is out the window. I don't like that argument. People like say, oh, but you know, All In. But I'm like, eh, two different things, kind of. It was like All In was, I still labeled that as like almost, it's it was like a 40% ROH pay-per-view. Because at that
it's its own entity.
Yeah, like AEW wasn't a thing at the time. So like really, it's not, that wasn't the first event. People always label it as the first event. Like Double or Nothing technically was AEW's first event. So that probably would be it. Even though Tony Khan's is Revolution is the WrestleMania for some whatever. I can't believe you said that 2 years ago. And like everyone brings it up every year around Revolution time now.
He's like never going to live it down.
Yeah.
And Revolution is, I think it's always been great. You know, I think back to like Young Bucks versus Kenny and Hangman and all these like really great matches. But Double or Nothing, it's just the vibe. Like, it just gives me WrestleMania vibes more than Revolution does.
No, I get you. Yeah, I get the same feelings, too. It'd be cool, too, if they did something like that with Double or Nothing. And if they went and did Jacksonville's, or I mean, at that time in May or June, right, Jack, they have that time to kind of do something at that stadium. Obviously, the one that Tony Khan has with the Jaguars, because NFL season didn't start till a little bit later on. So I think they have that alluded time to do something cool there, which I think they will do. I have to think that it's in the back of Tony's head to do a stadium show at that stadium eventually. So we shall see. But moving on, two non-related questions. So I brought one of these questions up on me and Jackie's Let's Talk show. So I'm going to ask you them. So there are would you rather questions, and they're completely random. And they really make you think.
These are fun.
Yeah. So I'm going to ask the one that I asked Jackie on our show first. So would you rather go back to the age of five with everything that you know, or know everything your future self is going to learn?
I would probably want to know everything my future self is going to learn. Could you imagine being five and having an adult brain? I feel like right. you would just suffer.
Thank you. That's exactly what I said. I'm like, that's a lot of pressure.
You're sitting in kindergarten and you just know all this stuff about the world and all these other five-year-olds don't. No.
But if you're a very patient person and you time it right, you can be a very wealthy person because you know a lot of stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. You're smarter than the other kid across from you, you know, drawing his hand on a piece of paper. Way smarter than that kid.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say that's a lot of existential dread for a five-year-old. Yeah. I'm just saying.
I'd rather be happy and five and like coloring in my coloring books and watching Dragon Tales and than worrying about the stock market.
Kids eating cereal Saturday morning, watching CNN on TV.
And then I would know that like the 2008 financial crisis was coming in a few years, and I would just be waiting forever for that. No, or
getting your parents ready, be like, Mom, guess what's happening?
Listen, I know it sounds crazy, but
let's start saving right
hear
now.
Hear me out.
The next one is, so I didn't get to ask this on our show, Jackie, so you can chime in if you want. Would you rather have all traffic lights you approach turn green, or never have to stand in any line again?
I'll never have to stand in a line. I hate waiting in line for anything. You know, traffic lights, they're not that long. It's fine. You can wait. But, you know, when you're waiting in line for at the supermarket, or even worse, you're waiting in line to get into a concert or to buy merch or something, it's the worst. Like hours.
Yeah. Okay. I'm torn between this one because I've been in situations where, I guess maybe that's just my own fault, but where I'm like in a rush and I seem to hit every single freaking red light possible. Like the universe is like, oh, I'm about to fuck with this guy. Like it's just not fun whatsoever. But I also understand the line thing. Like if I, especially at wrestling shows, since we can bring this up, if I'm like, oh, I want to get to the merch stand, you go to the merch stand, it's like around all the way and it reaches the other merch stand. So it's,
Oh, no. And the workers are always like, there's merch on like level two or whatever. And everybody runs to level two at the same time.
No. It's like defeats the whole purpose. I feel like I'm in a car far less than I'm ever going to be in line for something. Like if I'm online to get my coffee in the morning, or if I'm online to like, I'll find myself in line for things more often in, and with a lot less patience. I think you and I were talking about this earlier. Like I said, my Jersey self could never, like, I just, you're high strung all the damn time. So it's like, if I had a way to just, like, I'll snap my fingers and boom, I'm in the front of the line, I'm in and I'm out, that would be my option.
Well, there you go.
That's the dream.
It is a dream. It is a fantastic dream never to wait in any line whatsoever. Life would be much simpler, but unfortunately, lines are going to be lines. So, Jackie, continue on.
So, this is a podcast about the internet wrestling community. So, I have...
Is it really?
We like to do a little pros and cons here. So what would you say are the positive aspects of being involved in the online wrestling community?
It's really interesting because I feel like wrestling is such a niche thing. And I know people, you know, in real life who watch wrestling, but it's so fun to connect with people who also like wrestling and are as passionate about it as I am. And if, you know, the IWC didn't exist, or it wasn't like we know it today, then I don't think we would build those connections. And I met you guys, I met a bunch of other people all around the world through the IWC. So definitely building those bonds is a positive thing. And I also feel like there's a lot of really, really nice and supportive people in the IWC. If I'm ever having a problem or I need help or, you know, whatever it might be, I know that there's people I can reach out to and they'll help me. And I feel like that's definitely, there's a sense of community in the IWC that maybe wouldn't have existed if this community, if this group was never built. So that's definitely something positive about it, I'd say.
Yeah, 100% agreed. And I'm like, we, the three of us would not be sitting here doing this lovely little interview had it not been for that, because we're all in different parts of the country. And then, you know, to think about, we all know Maggie, who works with you at Fightful Overbooked. And I'm like, she's all the way in Bulgaria. What point in my life would I ever take a trip to Bulgaria to meet Maggie, who's one of my favorite people? And I'm like,
now I would.
You know, it's like, I mean, but I'm just saying, like, it's just, it's such a profound thing that this mm-hmm. thing, professional wrestling, which most people would label as very, like, silly and, you know, nonsensical, mm-hmm. but it brings people from all parts of the world together, and having the, you know, things like Twitter, Instagram, you know, all forms of social media has allowed us to kind of bridge the gap a little bit. So in that sense, it has been very positive.
Yeah, there's some gems out there. There is some gems. Oh, yeah. And it does help, especially like when you're struggling, like say like on a Dynamite or even a Rampage night, like you're struggling mentally and you need like a little pick me up. There's always those people in the IWC that are there to kind of pick you up. And there's been times where like I've struggle to want to watch Dynamite or Rampage. I, as soon as I log on and see the excitement for like the hype, whether it's even you, Kylie, you retweeting about Dynamite or somebody just tweeting about Dynamite, and like, you know what? I'm hype again. Let's go. I'm ready to watch tonight. Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of great people out there.
It's also really fun to watch Dynamite or Rampage or Impact or a pay-per-view or whatever's happening. And it's really fun to see people who either interpret something differently than I do, or they pick up on something that I didn't. And I feel like that enhances my enjoyment of wrestling more, because I'm getting more of the story, or maybe I'm seeing things from a different angle than I had before. So even if I don't like something, when I see it, someone who sees it differently, I start to like it a little bit more. So I feel like my viewing of wrestling is also benefited from the IWC.
That's a good perspective. But with that, we take our pros and we're going to bring a little bit of our cons. I don't want to say like it as a negative thing, but it's kind of to open a little bit of discussion for a positive change. So what would you say have been some of the drawbacks of the internet wrestling community? And in particular, your perspective, being a woman who is a content creator out there in the public eye, and what do you think are some ways that it can be improved upon?
So one thing I've learned, especially being part of Fightful, is that as a woman in the IWC, what you say about wrestling is going to be scrutinized heavily. People are going to find something to harp on, and they're going to keep it going and going and going. I remember Haley and I did, after All Out and the horrible, horrible stuff about CM Punk and the Elite, we just did an episode of Tag Talk, I think it was, and we just talked about it. We didn't say anything that I thought was too bad, but poor Joel Pearl had to be in our comment section for the entire day, leading misogynistic, horrible comments.
Wow.
Yeah, and I take it a lot better than I think a lot of people do, because Twitter's not real life. YouTube is not real life. It is what it is. People, they're going to say things. It is what it is. But that was really eye-opening for me, in that I think the IWC, when someone says something they disagree with about wrestling, or maybe they forget to say something that they think should have been said or whatever, that there's this tendency for people to really jump on it, and multiple people doing it. People make mistakes. People tweet a lot of things that maybe they shouldn't tweet. And that's just the nature of social media. But there's something specific about differences in opinions on wrestling that causes people to be nasty and aggressive. And for me, it's just wrestling. I think we just need to, I think a lot of people just need to realize that at the end of the day, wrestling is an art as much as it is a sport. And the way you see it isn't the way I see it, isn't the way Jackie sees it, isn't the way Kyle sees it. And that doesn't mean any of us are wrong. And we don't need to fight about all this stuff constantly. And it's just people are quick to criticize each other about just the most mundane things about wrestling. So if I had to pick one thing, it's definitely that. Just stop psychoanalyzing each other and, you know, going through everyone's tweets and opinions with a fine tooth comb, because it's not fun for anyone.
No, it's definitely not. And, you know, I'd like to give like sometimes people like a little bit of the benefit of the doubt, like maybe you shouldn't have tweeted that. But then there's some people out there that are just, you know, I'm sorry to say, Jackie, we say all the time, they're just straight up croutons, and croutons are going to crouton. They're going to tweet what they're going to tweet. But again, like you said, like, Twitter is not like you shouldn't really take what these, or even trolls, you can refer to them as, say on Twitter or even in like comment sections. It's going to happen. Like these people should be made to pay for their tweets, but that's never going to happen. Moving past it it shouldn't happen to begin with. You're right. Like it's over. It's like, I have this opinion about Kenny Omega, and someone's like, well, you're a piece of crap for thinking that. I was like, well, like what? It's over a guy, a wrestler, my dude. Like it's, you're calling me a piece of trash as a human being for thinking this about a professional wrestler, my opinion about it. It's just, when people bring up that Twitter is a cesspool sometimes, it really is. And it's tough, but, that's why one of our fans has a 1,500 mute list and growing. So she just learned to use the good old mute button and move on with them. And I've kind of taken that a little bit. Anything I just see that's just straight up negative, it's either a block or a mute right away. And just, I can't deal with it anymore, just reading on my timeline. But yeah, you're absolutely right, though.
Yeah, I've started preemptively blocking. If someone's, even if it's not to me, if I see someone saying something nasty, I just block them. And I'm guilty of this, so I don't want it to sound like I'm preaching, like I'm a saint. There's been plenty of times where I've gotten in Twitter arguments and Twitter fights, especially if you're coming for, like, my friends.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just, I've been in that spot, so I know what it's like to be in that spot, so I don't want it to sound like I am just a super mature person who is just above it all, because I'm not. but at the end of the day, I feel like there are people who are, their entire Twitter existence, I guess, is based on this tendency to overreact to people's tweets or their opinions, or search out tweets and opinions just to, you know, start fights and arguments for engagement and views and quote tweets and all this sort of stuff. And that is like the big, maybe that's like my big thing we need to work on, is not engagement farming in a way that hurts people's feelings and sends people to attack them. That's the big thing.
Yeah, I'm like, people need to understand that there are instances where you literally don't have to say anything at all. Mm-hmm. You really just, like, you know, if you disagree with something, there are plenty of times I see things I disagree with. You just scroll past it and you just move along. There's no need to verbally attack somebody. And a lot of the times I'm like, you're getting so heated and cruel towards the person behind the opinion. And that's... that's where the problems are. It's like, if you disagree with the opinion, you disagree with the opinion. But why attack the person for having the opinion?
Yeah. And if I'm going to add, it goes both ways, but I see it mostly in the wrestling community the one way. Men, it's to you all out there. Be respectful of women in the IWC. My God, some of the comments I see on a normal picture that's posted on Twitter, aka Jackie here, every single day. Come on now. Please rethink your tweet, you know? Type it out and be like, should I send this? You probably shouldn't, 9 times out of 10. Just be more respectful. It's getting out of hand sometimes. I'm just like, oh, man. Just everyone can see what you just typed there, my guy. Let's move on and never do that again.
Thank you, Kyle. Thank you for speaking to your people out there. So speaking of Twitter, we have a question from Jennifer Griffin on Twitter, who says, how do you balance being a TA, finishing up your grad, prepping for your PhD, and your podcasting schedule? I'm exhausted just reading that.
I don't. So I feel like a lot of people don't know this about me, that I work as a historian professionally and I'm getting my PhD and stuff. But I'm blessed. Like, I work with a lot of people who are super understanding. Like, everyone at Fightful, if I need to do something else that isn't Fightful, they 100% understand, and I can do basically whatever I want and I'll be fine. I'll still, you know, make my money and all that sort of stuff. When I got into wrestling podcasting, it was a hobby. And it was just something I was doing for fun. I was with Body Slam. I wasn't with Fightful.
And then, I remember that.
Yeah. And then it very quickly became, oh, you're going to Fightful. Oh, now you're getting your own show on Fightful. Oh, and now you have this audience. It happened very quick. It happened over the course of like a couple months. So I was already in grad school. So it's just a matter of me just doing the work and getting it done. And I'm tired a lot of the times. I'm not going to say it's all like rainbows and roses and that I am superhuman and I can do all these things, because I can't. There's times where I don't do stuff. There's times where I don't give my students 100%, like today. I don't give them 100%. They maybe don't get the best lectures from me, whatever. I do my best and I try. And because I love this, I love wrestling podcasting. Well, I also love the work and the teaching and the research that I do in history. I think they're both equally as important and equally as fulfilling. So I make sacrifices where I can. I do my schedule as I can. And I'm just lucky that I'm surrounded on both sides by people who get it.
And consume a lot of caffeine, I would assume.
I do.
Damn right. Team caffeine. Let's go all day.
Caffeine in a dream. No, there are times where you're talking about the things that you're, you know, that you're doing schedule wise. And I'm just like, we all have the same amount of hours in a day. I try to remember that everybody has the same 24 hours in a day. But the fact that some people can really allocate so much into one day and manage to accomplish so many different tasks and whatever. And I told you this earlier today. I'm like, I am not blowing smoke or anything. I find it really inspiring. I'm like, here she is. She's, you know, doing the grad school stuff. She's going for her PhD. She somehow manages to, like, you know, still kick ass and get her workouts in. And she's like, you know, doing the Fightful stuff. It's all very, like, ambitious, and it's, you should pat yourself on the back because you're accomplishing a hell of a lot. And you might not feel doing it on a daily basis, and you know, it feels like a lot, but you're doing it and you're freaking kicking ass at it. And the whole, you know, getting accepted into the PhD program and stuff like that. Let us be amongst the group to congratulate you, because that's really cool stuff.
Thank you so much. I do struggle with, I guess, imposter syndrome is the term we're all using. Mm-hmm. But, you know, some people, you know, everyone has the same 24 hours in a day. But I feel like I don't have kids. I have a really flexible schedule. So while, you know, we all live the same days and everything, I am blessed to be in these specific circumstances that let me do all these different things that I love and that I enjoy, like, you know, being in grad school, like doing wrestling podcasting. I'm just glad, and this is what I was talking about earlier, where everyone is so supportive and everything. I also have, if I'm ever, you know, in my Twitter circle, which is my new favorite thing, if I'm ever super down or I'm struggling or I'm stressed or whatever, I just have to send out a tweet saying I'm super stressed, and then everyone's there and they're supportive. And they remind me that, you know what, I'm not a bad person if I don't do a thing or if I have to miss something. So that's also been really, really nice to have a group of people who remind me that no, you don't have to fill every hour in your day with things to be productive and, you know, successful. You have to take care of yourself too. That's also self-care. Maybe that's the key. That's the key to getting things done. Self-care.
100%. We're big advocates for that here. I don't always get it done. Kyle could probably agree with that.
Oh my God. You have no idea.
Not always high on the list of priorities, but in terms of the whole imposters, you know, syndrome and stuff like that, totally get it. Kyle here has been on the receiving end of many a text of, I don't know what I'm doing. I think when my life is falling apart and, you know, I feel like I'm not really contributing much or I'm not accomplishing things or whatever. It's sometimes it's just the good old metaphorical slap in the back of the head, like, get it together. You're doing just fine.
Exactly that.
And we have another question here. So I guess
it was the same.
Two people asked the same question.
So weird, because it was like literally a minute from each other. And I'm like, did they plan this?
They're on the same wavelength. So Ascended and Isaac on Twitter both asked, who was your inspiration to get into wrestling journalism / content creation?
So it's kind of weird because my big inspiration was just WrestleTalk. Like, I just loved WrestleTalk. It was so weird, but I just found WrestleTalk one day.
Support.
It was like in my YouTube recommendations. And I was like, I love these guys. They're so funny and they're so relatable. And I really admired the connection they had with their audience. That there's a bond there that isn't in a lot of wrestling YouTube channels. So I really admired that. But what really got me into media was Cassidy Haynes. He was just like, hey, you want to do a podcast? I was like, sure, I guess I'll come do one podcast, my one singular podcast. That was really what got me into it. Cassidy just wanted more women in wrestling media. And I was a young woman with a mid-sized following on Twitter. And he just said, hey, you know, I have this website. I have this YouTube channel. Come do a podcast. So I did it. And while I was doing it, in the back of my mind, I was like, well, like, what would Ollie Davis do? Like, how would Ollie Davis build this audience? Because our first show, the first show I ever did was an interview, so that doesn't count. But it was about like women's wrestling and mental health and all this sort of stuff. So that connection with the audience was necessary. But yeah, WrestleTalk, as weird as that is, because I've never been on WrestleTalk, I probably have no ambitions to do daily news videos like that, but I just love those guys.
Hey, if they're watching, get her on already. What are you waiting for? Jesus.
You heard it here first.
Or... Jackie, what was your little inspiration get you into podcasting there, bud?
Is this your attempt to put yourself over?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
So, I had never listened to wrestling podcasts when I was primarily watching WWE. And it wasn't until I started watching AEW, which I thankfully got in, like, during the inception, that I started venturing out into listening to wrestling podcasts. And amongst the first podcasts that I ever listened to was Kyle's previous podcast. And so it was his podcast and Floyd's podcast, which is still going, All Things Elite, and listened to them pretty religiously, like weekly. And so when it came time for me to kind of step into the chair and step behind a microphone, I told him this and I told Floyd this also, a lot of my nuances and cadence and like styles and stuff like that, I kind of took inspiration from what Kyle did and what Floyd did, because I had no idea. I had never been in podcasting before. I had no freaking clue where to start. I mean, I know how to talk. I know how to, you know, articulate and verbalize and stuff like that. I'm a good conversationalist, but conversing and podcasting are two different realms. So yes, Kyle, you were amongst the top inspirations for me and my podcasting style. So there, go pat yourself on the back buddy.
I will.
Go on.
I was listening to, God, I first started podcasting, I think it was the day after WrestleMania 30. And at the time I was listening to a UK based podcast about WWE, and it was this guy and this girl. What are they called? I don't know if they're still around today, but they're, it's like RTM, I think their name was. But anyways, which was stood for Real to Me. they based their name off the Real to Me, damn it video. But they were, I used to listen to them all the time, and it was such a good show, those two. And I'm like, you know what? I introduced it to my, not Phil on our show, my friend Phil that lives here, who I call No Cell Phil. I started getting him to listen to it. I'm like, man, we should start a podcast. Let's just start one. We started out in my living room with my iPhone 4 on the coffee table on voice memo. And we just hit record, and that's how we recorded every episode. I would just upload it. And at the time, I had like the slowest computer in the world, so it would take like 3 hours to upload. And like, that's how we started. And from there, it just like gradually, like, if thinking back to where I started to where I am today with this like $800 sound recording board in front of me, my gaming PC that I bought into, the monitors I've here, the lighting I have, like everything that I have today is just a night and day difference between where I started to where I am today. It's incredible. And it all started from listening to a wrestling podcast. I wouldn't have done it if I wasn't listening to them. So, and they're probably not listening, but shout out to you guys.
Shout out to them.
Everybody has their origin stories, and then you go back and you watch like the first episode of anything.
It's still on YouTube. I can link you guys whenever you want. My first ever wrestling podcast episode is on YouTube.
You gotta link me.
It's like listening to the sound of paint drying. I had no excitement in my voice. It sounded like I was reading off a teleprompter. It was awful. But I'll let you listen to it.
Sometimes I go back, and when I first started at Body Slam, I did a lot of interviews because it was when ROH was closing.
Okay.
And they were trying to get these guys a bunch of interviews so they could get, you know, bookings or whatever. And so I did a lot of those interviews, and I go back and I'm embarrassed. I'm like, who let me do this? And you know what? It's a learning experience.
And look at you now. But we've talked a lot about wrestling, obviously. It's a wrestling podcast. But who is Kylie outside of wrestling? Like, what are your main interests and your hobbies?
I am a strange person, I'll say. I have so many just weird special interests. I really, maybe it's out of left field, I'm super into theater and Broadway.
Ooh.
I really love musicals and things.
Yeah. Ooh, what's your favorite musical?
Please tell me it's Wicked.
I do love Wicked.
I saw it on Broadway. Really, oh, so
I've never seen
good.
Wicked.
It's so good.
It's off Broadway, but I guess now it's Broadway. I really love Six.
I've heard of that.
It's kind of historical one, so it makes sense that I would like it. you know, Rent is a classic. I love, that was probably the first one that I really, really got into was Rent.
I've seen that. It's good.
But yeah, I really love Broadway. I also, when I was a kid, I never really watched kid TV. I watched adult TV.
Oh.
So and my dad, he's just a weird man. But another thing he really liked was, he's weird. He'll admit it. It's okay.
I call my really dad weird. It's okay.
he really
weird dad's
liked,
club.
Weird dad club. We should get them together and have weird. And anyway.
and my dad watches this too, so now he's gonna get a complex problem.
Can you give me Kyle's dad's number? I gotta give him a shout.
He's like, weird. I'm a weird dad. I didn't know I was a weird dad. No, weird. it's the age. It's okay. They're allowed to be. But he was really, really into like Italian mafia stuff.
Ooh.
So for my entire life, I've been a major Sopranos nerd. I love the Sopranos, which is like, there's so many problematic things about that show now looking at it. But when I was a kid, I was like, yeah, Tony, you're so cool. I love you. But I mean, probably not now. I'm getting into video games. I was not allowed to play video games as a kid, but I have a Switch. I have an Xbox, and I'm getting into it. I'm learning. Yeah.
See, Jackie, you need to get yourself anyone. Some.
Yeah. If anyone has any game recommendations, like, I'm totally on board. I need to learn. I'm catching up.
Are you a Harry Potter fan?
I love Harry Potter.
So Hogwarts Legacy, at least for Switch, not coming out till June. Xbox, the previous generation, it's like, you have to wait till April. Right now, I think they're releasing it this Friday on, like, the next-gen consoles and PC. But my peak, I guess, I looked it up. There's a site you can type in, can I run it? And they'll tell you if your PC can run games. Fortunately, mine, my graphics card cannot run the new Harry Potter. It's too advanced.
Damn.
So I have to wait until it comes out for Xbox in April. Because I don't have that new one.
I saw like trailers and previews for it. It looks really, really good. I'm really excited about it. It's been a while since we've had something, maybe this is controversial, but something good in Harry Potter. Like,
weren't a fan of Fantastic Beasts, not at all.
It was okay, but I feel it wasn't what I expected, and maybe I'm like disappointed because of that. I'm excited for a game, because Harry Potter games, I feel, they haven't been that great.
There's been so much hype before it's even released, and now I'm stumbling upon the TikTok videos that are making me pee my pants laughing of, like, certain, like, what people are getting ready to do, because you can do the death curse in this game, and they just play clips from Harry Potter, and then right after play the scene that where Voldemort kills Harry. And, like, the one scene will start, like, with the trolley girl from the first movie. Like, anything off the trolley there? And then and just Voldemort killing her.
Oh, my God.
It's like,
God.
This is the first thing I'm going to do when I buy the game. I'm like, it's become a trend on TikTok. I've been sending them to Phil. And Phil's been, like, we've been howling at all of these. So whenever we stumble across them, we'll send it to each other. There's one where, like, Harry's sending his bird away from the first movie. And then it's Voldemort killing her.
Voldemort just follows Harry around.
Oh, it's because it's an open, Jackie, it's basically Grand Theft Auto open world, but for Harry Potter. So, like, people are getting ready to just be absolute dickheads and just go around killing, like, new people or people going to Hogwarts for their first year.
Wow. Of all the things you could do, that's what people are, like, excited to do. I'm not surprised. I shouldn't be surprised.
I'm going to send some to you, Kylie, after we're done later tonight. You're going to die.
Please do. Yeah. So we'll do a fun wrap-up question here. You say you're a historian, and that's your forte. So tell us one random piece of history that personally fascinates you, something that maybe majority of people wouldn't know about.
Ooh. So class I'm teaching this semester, it's called Pandemics and World History. And one of the interesting things that in preparing to teach the class I learned is that back before people knew what viruses were, bacteria, germs, all that sort of stuff, they somehow knew how to make other people sick. So there's this really interesting story about the Haitian Revolution. People would get yellow fever and get sick. They didn't know how. It's from mosquitoes, we know now. They didn't know how. But they were like, if we're going to beat these, you know, French men, we have to keep them here till summer. So there's these really interesting stories about Haitian revolutionaries, like enslaved people, like running through the woods in Jesus. Haiti, like evading the French, because they knew if they kept the French there, they would get yellow fever and die in the summer. So it's just this cat and mouse of the Haitian Revolution that is so funny to me. Because if you were from Haiti or West Africa, you probably had some kind of immunity because you either had yellow fever or it was passed on to you from your mother or whatever. But French people didn't. And so then French people, they are there in the summer and they're getting yellow fever and they have no clue why. and Napoleon's army is just decimated. And then he takes them and marches them through Russia, and they get cholera and dysentery. So he cut by the end of all of this, he goes from like 500,000 troops to like a couple thousand.
Jesus.
Because he's just marching around the world. Yeah, it's really funny. They have no understanding of disease or of germs or anything, but they're like, you know what? These French people, they can't hack it in the summer. So we just gotta outrun them. We'll beat them. And they did.
And that was History Corner with Kylie Fuller. Wow.
That's wild.
That is wild.
And something that I would have never known, so you just taught me something.
Hold on.
Spread the word.
As we're going through another crazy pandemic, you know, right now. So it's very
just think about it.
Apropos for the time.
Like 50 years from now, this is going to be in the history books then about the history of this pandemic and, you know, gas prices being like, at least where I am. I can't say the gas price. Damn it. You guys go by different conversion over there.
Oh, those conversions. Yeah.
But like I just remember the one thing I remember vividly was like the first couple of months when I'd be watching the morning news and they're showing like the traffic cameras, and there's usually the highways they show that's always backlogged at like 9 a.m. There wasn't a single person on the highway, and it's like eerie to look at. It's almost like you're looking at like if a zombie apocalypse happened, there's no one on the roads.
Or all those videos of like wild animals sneaking into the city. Like, where are all the people? Like,
hello? My city was raided with coyotes. They were just coming out of the woodwork, just walking down main streets. And I'm like, what the hell is happening?
Nature was thriving, man. Yeah.
It was crazy.
Crazy to think that we're living in these times. But at least we're not outrunning people in the woods. So there's that.
And at least there's no zombies.
Yes, for now. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially for those of us that are watching The Last of Us.
So good.
Oh, we could go on a whole other tangent about that, but we'll not do that. Maybe a side episode. We'll have to bring you on for like a nerdy elite episode or something and just talk about The Last of Us forever, because the show is freaking amazing. But Kylie, it's been a joy having you with us. Please tell everyone where they can find you on social media and tell them a little bit about Tag Talk and where they can watch it.
So you can follow me on Twitter at @Fuller_Kylie. Tag Talk is on Fightful Overbooked every Monday at 3. We talk all about tag team wrestling. So sometimes there's, you know, big news and things in tag team wrestling. We'll talk about that. We just, our most recent episode was about the Bloodline, sort of talking about where we go with the Bloodline, where we go with the Usos, which was a lot of fun. So you can check that out on Fightful Overbooked. It's going to be an interesting few weeks because I'm going to have a lot of guests on the show. So indefinitely, we're going to have just people coming in and out. So it's going to be fun. Sometimes we do episodes. We did one on FTR. We did one on the Elite. The Hung Bucks, where we just kind of break it down, sort of the history of a team, their big stories, all that kind of stuff. So, but kind of both things going on with Tag Talk, but it's basically just tag team wrestling, whatever we want to talk about. So that's every Monday at 3. It's live on Fightful Overbooked. We also have Romanticized Wrestling, which I can't say the thing that I was going to say because I'm not sure it was announced yet, but Romanticized
Wrestling. We're about to have a leak.
Yeah, I said, oop. Romanticized Wrestling is basically a project all about storytelling and wrestling. So, you know, I can say, okay, so yeah, this just pertains to me, so I'll say it. I'm going to be doing an episode about the Golden Lovers.
Yes.
Yeah, so I'm doing research for that, getting like all my stuff set, everything, because there's a lot that happened in DDT time that's a little bit difficult to find and track down, but I'm doing my best. I'm not sure when that's going to be happening, when it's going to be going up, I should say, but I will have that. So follow me on Twitter for updates on that.
I'll be tabbing you for that for sure. 100%.
Yes. Super super exciting stuff. We do love it. And I wore my Kenny Omega shirt for the occasion because I knew you were going to be here. So
yeah. And you had said, I think on Twitter, that you were going to wear your Kenny Omega shirt. So I got my all out shirt. It has Kenny Omega on it. He's there.
Mine's in the wall.
Oh, interesting that it's the trios match, but love this shirt.
Kyle's just here repping for the brand. Yeah.
I could. Mine's in a wash. I'm like, whatever. I'll just put the Elite POV sweater on. I
didn't get the memo.
Plus, I can't. Plus, I hearse to walk, so I can't go that far.
We're gonna excuse poor Kyle because he's going through a lot right now. But Kylie, thank you so much for being here with us. It was a blast having you on, and I'm sure it won't be the last time that we have you involved in something we're doing here at Elite POV. So if you're watching this on patreon.com/elitepov, we thank you for your support, and it means so much to us. And it also means that you're watching this debut 5 days in advance of everyone else. If you're watching this on YouTube, please make sure to click like and subscribe while you're here. For myself, Jackie, Kyle, and Kylie, thank you for watching iHeartWC, and we'll see you next time.